This Posthumous Life, Keats's Last Days in Rome by Angus Graham Campbell, with Tom Palmer as John Keats and Scott Brooksbank as Joseph Seven.
Rome, February 1821. Just a few days before his death in his tiny bedroom overlooking the Spanish Steps, John Keats turned to his loyal friend Joseph Seven, who had not left his bedside for more than 3 weeks, with a disarming inquiry.
Seven, did you see anyone die?
The answer was no.
Well then, I pity you, poor Seven. What trouble and danger you have got into for me. Now you must be firm, for it will not last long. I shall soon be laid in the quiet grave.
But it hadn't come yet. During Keats's final few days, his friend was to realise...
The idea of death is his only comfort. The only prospect of ease. He talks of it with delight. It soothes his present torture.
Thank God for the quiet grave. Oh, I can feel the cold earth upon me, the daisies growing over me. Oh, for this quiet. How long will this posthumous life of mine last?
He remains very calm and good-natured, dozing between whiles. He has eaten a small pudding and taken his milk. He is still composed.
Then, at 4:30, on the 23rd of February, Keats cried out,
Seven, lift me up, for I am dying. I shall die easy. Don't be frightened. Thank God it has come.
He lay in his friend's arms for several hours.
His eyes looked upon me with extreme sensibility, but without pain. And at 11, he died in my arms. He is gone. He died with the most perfect ease. He seemed to go to sleep.
Shortly before he died, aged just 25, in the agony of his sickness, tortured by his separation from his fiancée Fanny Braun, and convinced of his failure as a poet, Keats implored Seven,
that no mention be made of me in any manner publicly, in reviews, magazines, or newspapers, that no engraving be taken of any picture of me, and that on my gravestone the following words should be written. Here lies one whose name was writ in water.
Keats and Seven had arrived in Rome some 3 months earlier, on November the 15th, after a period of the loathsome misery of quarantine, cooped up for 10 days in Naples Harbour. Dr. Clark had found them accommodation here in the Casino Rossa at 26 Piazza di Spagna, where they could hear the music of the Boccaccio fountain and the chatter and the clatter from the Spanish Steps. The next 2 weeks were to prove something of an Indian summer for Keats.
I am better than I was in quarantine. All the trees are in blossom here, and in our house we have roses blowing.
Keats seems much pleased with Rome.
They hired horses and rode in the Pincio, attracting the attention of Napoleon's sister Pauline, whose semi-nude statue in the Palazzo Borghese Keats had christened the Aeolian Harp, as...
Every wind can play upon it.
Seven hired a piano and played Haydn sonatas, delighting Keats.
This Haydn is like a child. There is no knowing what he'll do next.
Nor Keats, for that matter. Disgusted with the poor quality of the food sent up from the local trattoria, Keats threw open the window and out went the lot.
Macaroni!
Large white earthworms.
Cauliflower! Chicken and rice!
And now, Seven, you'll see, we'll have an excellent dinner.
As indeed they did. Then in the evenings, the friends read the English papers and Don Quixote and Mrs. Edgeworth's novels, while Mrs. Clark cooked delicacies for Keats, and Seven made coffee over the tiny fire in Keats's bedroom.
I blow for an hour. The smoke comes fuming out, and then my kettle falls over on the burning sticks.
But the good times were not destined to last. On December the 10th, Keats had a massive hemorrhage and his health deteriorated rapidly. Now he was being nursed continually by Seven.
I read, cook, make the beds, and do all the menial offices. In 6 weeks, I have not had 6 hours of fresh air. I sit by the bed and read all day.
Oh, Seven, I can see under your quiet look, immense twisting and contrasting. You don't know what you're reading.
And at night, I humour him in his wanderings. The torture he suffers all and every night, and the best part of the day, is dreadful in the extreme. His mind is worse than all, despair in every shape. His imagination and memory present every image in horror, so that every morning and night I tremble for his intellect. His suffering is now beyond description. He cannot bear any books. The fact is, he cannot bear anything. His state is so irritable. Would that his enemies could see the martyrdom of the most noble feeling and brightest genius to be found in existence. He dies of a broken heart and spirit.
Seven, I bequeath to you all the happiness I have ever known. Tell Taylor I shall soon be in a second edition, in sheets and cold press. I can already feel the flowers growing over me.
How true these words must have seemed from the Ode to a Nightingale.
Darkling, I listen, and for many a time I have been half in love with easeful death, called him soft names in many a mused rhyme to take into the air my quiet breath. Now more than ever seems it rich to die, to cease upon the midnight with no pain, while thou art pouring forth thy soul abroad in such an ecstasy. Still wouldst thou sing, and I have ears in vain, to thy high requiem become a sod.
Should poor Keats die, everything in his room is condemned to be burned, even the paper on the walls. The Italians are so alarmed at consumption. I cannot be alone now. My nerves are shattered. These brutal Italians have nearly finished their monstrous business. They have burned all the furniture and are now scraping the walls, making new windows, new doors, and even a new floor.
Keats was buried near the pyramid of Caius Cestius in the non-Catholic cemetery in Rome, a few yards from the grave of Shelley's child. His unopened letters were placed over his heart in his coffin. Then
the good-hearted doctor made the men put turfs of daisies upon the grave, saying, "This would be poor Keats's wish, could he but know it."
And to this day, violets and daisies grow around Keats's grave and that of Seven, who on his death in Rome many years later was buried next to him, with his tombstone announcing him to be the friend of Keats. Keats's own tomb does not bear his name. It simply says, "This grave contains all that was mortal of a young English poet who on his deathbed, in the bitterness of his heart at the malicious powers of his enemies, desired these words to be engraved on his tombstone. Here lies one whose name was writ in water." He also left behind one other final wish.
Bright star, would I were steadfast as thou art, not in lone splendour hung aloft the night, and watching with eternal lids apart, like nature's patient sleepless eremite, the moving waters at their priest-like task of pure ablution round earth's human shores, or gazing on the new soft fallen mask of snow upon the mountains and the moors. No, yet still steadfast, still unchangeable, pillowed upon my fair love's ripening breast, to feel forever its soft fall and swell, awake forever in a sweet unrest, still, still to hear her tender taken breath, and so live ever, or else swoon to death.
In This Posthumous Life by Angus Graham Campbell, John Keats was played by Tom Palmer, and Joseph Seven by Scott Brooksbank. The narrator was Angus Graham Campbell.